You're listening to the Prepared Homestead Podcast, equipping you to build a self-sufficient homestead in uncertain times.
We're your hosts, Sean and Monica Mitzel, coming to you from Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm in the mountains of northern Idaho. We're glad you're with us.
On today's podcast, we pick back up where we left off last time in episode 97, talking about how to make your homestead more resilient financially. Okay, so we're going to pick up that discussion here once again. Now, any enterprise that you do, you have to do your research to make sure that you can have a viable operation. All right, I'm going to give you an example real quick. I heard of a guy, he retired. He was a retired dentist or something like that. He had a lot of money. And he wanted to go. He's like, I don't want anything to do with this anymore. I want to raise cattle. And I'm going to sell, you know, grass-fed beef. So he bought property, set it up really nice, brought in like 70 head of cattle. And then was raising them. And then went to the into his market and said, hey, I've got grass-fed beef. I want to sell it to you. And then the person immediately asked, okay, well, was it USDA processed? And he's like, well, no. He's like, well, I can't buy it. Boom. Just like that, he was shut off. Mm. He can use custom processors all day, but you have to understand the laws and the rules associated with selling to restaurants or stores, things like that. Because in most cases, all that has to be USDA. Unfortunately, what happened is there was thousands upon thousands of places that get meat processed in America. Just not too long ago, like a few decades ago, now it's down to a couple thousand USDA certified processing plants, which is a total shame.
Yeah, and remember that every state is different. Some states will follow the federal law. Some will be more restrictive.
Right.
So you need to know your individual state. And even within those states, sometimes they're broken down into districts that also have their own individualized law, which is the case in Idaho. So be looking for that. And a great resource is the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. To become a member there, you can call with any questions about the law within your state or within your district, and they'll help you out to make sure that you're staying within the letter of the law.
I recommend that even if you're not a homesteader right now, or maybe you're on some land, but you're not even really doing anything right now. Just join them as a consumer, and so you can start getting their material, start reading. It'll give you an education.
Yeah,
as well.
And keep up with what's going on.
Because they have a consumer member category, which is really not that expensive at all. So everybody, if you care about your food and if you want to be a homesteader, you should be a member of Farm to Consumer Legal Defense.
Yeah, Fund. And they also have a farmer category, and they also have a homesteader category now, which is really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Tell them we sent you.
Yeah.
We get nothing from it, but
we don't.
We like them.
We do.
Okay, so the next thing that we're going to talk about is that you could do is become a buyer and seller of goods. You know, you can center it around. It doesn't have to be centered around homestead type stuff. It doesn't have to be centered around animals, but it could be around materials, or it could be around.
Could be books.
It could be books.
I mean, if you know a lot about books, you know, I had a friend. I still have a friend. She's still my friend, but she did that for many years, where she was finding books at library book sales for very, very inexpensive, but she knew what books were valuable and which ones were out of print
items,
and collector's
right.
items and things like that. And so she would get them very inexpensively and then sell them for more on eBay or homeschool swap groups.
Yeah.
And was making good money.
In fact, she didn't, and that's how she paid for all of her homeschooling.
Yeah.
Okay. So another, that's a great way. And, you know, there's lots of places that, you know, if you're willing to go pick it up, people just want to get rid of it all the time. If you're willing to run around a little bit, maybe you're going to go pick up a junky table that you can put a little bit of time and effort into and then turn around and sell it for $50.
Exactly. And everybody's looking for those, what's it called, upscaling? I can't remember what it's called right now. Where you're taking an
distressed
old
stuff
piece of furniture and, you know, and you're just doing some maintenance on it, or you're maybe painting something on it. or improving it in some way, or maybe you're just switching the use completely and making a crib into, you know, a display case or...
Yeah, I've seen a lot of skills, really interesting stuff. You take some old barn wood, turn it into a table or a farm table or whatever, and then turn around and say repurposed barn wood and watch all of the yuppies go crazy and buy your
It's very popular on Etsy.
For $500.
So you always be looking for things like that. If you have woodworking skills or painting skills or anything, use those, you know, find the resources around you that are free, getting rid of whatever, and repurpose those and... Right. Sell them.
Now, make sure it's worth your time. Make sure that you're not spending 8 hours on a project and then turn around and selling it for, you know, $20.
Right.
Okay, that's not worth your time.
Again, do your market research.
Yep. Okay, so that is a lot of stuff. Let's talk about value adding to products. Okay, so maybe your one of your things is you've got a lot of extra tomatoes. All right. And so you're like, okay, I'm going to go to the farmer's market. And I'm going to sell these tomatoes. I happen to have a bumper crop in tomatoes, or I have a tomato and pepper hothouse, and I'm just filled with tomatoes. And you're going to go and sell them at the farmer's market. Well, that's great, and you might make a little extra money. But anytime you value add to your product, so in other words, if you take those tomatoes and turn it into farm fresh salsa, you all of a sudden you have really spiked the value of not only your product, but the how much money you're going to get.
Yeah, spaghetti sauce or even canning tomatoes. Right. People are going to pay a lot more money for that.
Absolutely. So anytime you – I don't want to call it processing. I'm going to call it value adding to your products. Do it. How can you do it? Because the reality is that the farmer gets very slim margins on products. Really. Mm-hmm. I mean – yeah, all that work, and you're getting slim margins on it. As soon as you value add, all of a sudden, now you're doing well.
Yeah, that reminds me of when we went through the forestry products class and talking about, you know, the boughs, just taking boughs off of the trees in the forest.
Right, like on Western Red Cedar, for example.
Yeah, and the boughs were, I mean, by truckload, were getting paid so little. But then you bring them to the manufacturer, well, not really the manufacturer. Yeah, and they package it. Or they put it in a ring, and all of a sudden they're selling that thing for $20.
Right.
$20 for some boughs.
25 feet of boughs.
That they paid very little for. So why not cut out the middleman? You know, why not be the person that not only gets the boughs off of your trees in your forest, but puts it in a circle on a piece of wood, right. And now you can sell it for $20 rather than the real cheap price that you would pay just providing the bough.
Absolutely. So you can always look for ways to value add to your product. So it's okay to sell the tomatoes at the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. Why not sell some salsa as well?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's some really good stuff. How about getting, where do we buy animals? Do we, you know, we talked about the hatchery. Of course, we have Craigslist. You know, there are some really good deals.
Well, especially in the winter, because everybody's trying to reduce their flocks, and their herds, and so they're putting their animals out there. That's when we've gotten our best deals.
Right. Hey, you want to save some meat or save some money on meat in the wintertime? Go on Craigslist and look at the animals that you could buy if you're willing to process them yourself.
Yep.
Now, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't know how they were raised. I don't know how they were fed. Okay. I mean, if you're a purist, then maybe you don't want to do that. Or maybe you want to talk to them and go, okay, how was it raised? How was it fed? What was it fed, et cetera? Well, one thing you could do if you want to kind of go somewhere in the middle is you take that animal in, you feed it clean for a couple weeks, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then process the animal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It doesn't mean that you got everything out of it, but that's a much cleaner animal than what you're going to get in commercially.
Right.
Every
and,
time.
And honestly, if you're really, you know, if your family is really struggling and you're not making a lot of money yet, and you should not be so obsessed over all of that.
Yeah.
Get the animal, like you said, take care of it well for a couple of weeks and then process. We can't get so caught up. Like, I absolutely will only have, you know, organically fed this, that we're rejecting,
yeah,
you know, perfectly good meat that could be feeding our family.
Right. And at the same time, compromised by buying commercial meat at the store.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe there are purists out there that would reject all of that and would rather suffer without not having enough meat.
Right.
But I would hope that most of our listeners would be willing to do what we're talking about and find those sources and then go through and process them themselves.
And if you don't know processing, learn it.
Learn.
And you know, if you're like, well, we don't have any money. I would sure like to. I would love to be able to buy, you know, good quality meat for under $1 a pound that you can get for sure on Craigslist with sheep or goats or anything else. Then learn it and try it. And then, you know what? Buy it and then watch the YouTube videos and then do it.
There's tons of videos out there that are instructional and there's books that are really good. And honestly, the only way to learn that kind of thing is doing it. You have to do it.
You got to do it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll read the books and watch videos and stuff. But when I really was to get good at it, it was by doing it.
Yep.
Okay, so That is a really important aspect of this. I mean, you can get free animals on Craigslist in many cases. They just don't want to feed them anymore.
Right.
They don't want to feed them through the winter. They don't have the money for hay. And that's not to take advantage of someone, but to take some animals off their hands.
Right, because you're helping somebody else, honestly.
Right. And if you can then turn around and use it for meat or whatever, then do it. And if you can turn around and use it to get your herds and flocks started, well, then do it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a good way to do it, and it's worth having to then either feed them through winter or whatever. But that is certainly a way to do it. Like you said, a lot of people would say, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you are serious about changing your financial situation as a homesteader or homesteader wannabe, then you would be willing to look at that.
Yeah, and you're always looking for ways to reduce costs because that is money saved. And therefore, less money you have to bring in.
Right.
I mean, it just makes sense.
Yeah, and this next one, we've mentioned this throughout, but we want to reiterate it here, and that's bartering and trading.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot to be said for this. There's a lot of value in this. You can save financially on this big time. I mean, you guys probably all know you have some skills, or maybe you've, you know, with just a friend, you say, hey, I'll do this for you, you do that for me. That's a win for everyone. And again, you know, there's positives all the way around. So you have to look for ways to barter and trade. And then if you don't have community built, well, then you need to work on that, because that's the place then when that happens a lot.
Yes, get to know your neighbors and, you know, reach out to them. Don't expect that they're always going to be the ones to reach out to you. A lot of people are just waiting for someone to come up to them. And so getting to know them, getting to know what they have, and maybe you recognize, wow, they have a need and I have that skill.
Right.
And so you just offer, and it just naturally builds itself into a relationship that is equally beneficial to both of you, not just in stuff, but, you know, in a friendship, in a community.
Right. Here's something that almost nobody does, but everybody would gain a lot from it, including financially, big time financially, and that's buy in bulk. And you may say, well, I do buy in bulk. I buy 50-pound bags of chicken scratch or chicken feet. Like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about buying a ton, 2,000 pounds of chicken feed. I don't care if you have 4 chickens. And let me explain, because you wouldn't want to buy a bunch of cracked grains and, you know, for 4 chickens, because it would probably, if it hasn't been processed or milled at all, would go bad before you'd use it. But when you tie people together and network, all of a sudden that doesn't become an impossible task. If you know 10 people and you have built community and you've built 10 people and even in just a group of like-minded homesteaders that are raising backyard chickens, all of a sudden with 10 people, let's say 10 people that only have 10 chickens, that's 100 chickens.
Right.
Now all of a sudden a ton of food makes a lot of sense. And instead of you buying that 50-pound bag for $19, all of a sudden that you're going in on it with these 10 other people and you're paying, you know, $10 or $11 a bag of 50-pound equivalent. Now that is huge
yeah.
savings. And that's across the board. I don't care if it's hay or straw or anything else. You can always get much better pricing if you will buy in bulk. And we used the example of the hatchery with the chicks. I mentioned earlier 1,000 chicks. Well, you can get a significant discount if you're willing to buy 1,000 chicks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that takes a little bit of work as far as
coordination
and bringing people together, but it is worth it. And if people are putting the deposits down, then you know they're going to pick them up. They're not going to back out. But you can save a significant amount of money by maybe it's those same 10 people, or maybe it's 20 or 30 people because you know there's 1,000 of them. That are willing to buy and maybe meat runs.
Mm-hmm.
As you're doing that, and this is the same group that you build, you can buy in bulk feed and bulk hay and all that kind of stuff with. This is a really good way to save money and to change your financial situation. All it takes is coordination.
Right.
And cooperation and voluntary association.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so all these things are great and they're a really good way for those that are tight to not only make ends meet, but to thrive.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to save a lot of money that way. Yeah, and now I'm going to talk about how you can save money in the kitchen. One of the things that I think a lot of women struggle with is learning how to literally cook from scratch. And I mean, figure out what products do you purchase from the store? Do you buy bread? Are you buying cereals that you can replace with, let's say, making a homemade granola? Or just recently, since we make oatmeal every morning for breakfast, I was trying to figure out a way that I can still keep the cost really reduced and make it an instant oatmeal where the kids can cook for themselves rather than having to get up and cook for, we have a household of, 13 people?
Something like that.
Yeah. Something like that. So what I ended up doing is taking a big, giant bulk bag of quick oats and grinding it down enough where now it could make an instant oatmeal. And then I added our sweetener and, you know, whatever. I added instant milk and a little bit of salt and it just mixed it up. And now the kids can grab a scoop of it and put it in the bowl and cook it up themselves. If I had to buy that the packets at the store, first of all, my kids would eat like 3 or 4 packets every morning. It'd be ridiculous. Yes, each. but because they're so small. But the other thing is they're expensive. I mean, I would be spending a ton of money.
Well, what's interesting is that when you look at those those boxes of 8 or mm-hmm. whatever at the store, it looks cheap.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, it's $2.50 for 8 packets. Well,
that's not 8. That's not 8 servings
one of
for
our
most
kids
teens.
Had 4, then all of a sudden, you know, every breakfast is costing us quite a bit of money.
Yeah, it is. And so that was just, you know, that's a way to think creatively in the kitchen, go, well, what do we eat and how can I make that less expensive? So beans, for example, you know, you buy those dry, it is very inexpensive. You can buy a lot of beans for very cheap. Now, if you're getting them in the cans, they're already pre-canned and processed, you're gonna pay a lot more money. So what I've gotten in the habit of doing is I make beans at least once a week. And so when I make beans, I double what I'm making and then I can. So I've, you know, piled up these canned beans in my pantry. And now I'm able, if I'm in a rush and I need to make a quick meal, I can go in there and I can grab. Now, of course, I need to keep up on this because some weeks I'm more busy. And so for several weeks in a row, I'll be using the beans rather than piling them up. But whenever I can see that I'm getting low, I'm like, okay, I need to make some more beans. Those are super simple to can. They're not hard. You soak them. You do a little cooking and you throw them into the cans and or jars. And you need to make sure that you have a pressure cooker. But do that. The other thing is broth. I make bone broth and I'm using chicken feet and heads and necks, but you don't necessarily have to do that. You can use carcasses
if
you...
better to use the entire animal.
Absolutely. And honestly, the chicken feet, the heads and the necks are the things that most people throw away. And so for us, that's just free. You know, we're not only from other people, but from our own.
We're value adding.
Yeah.
So when we ask them, and if they want all that stuff, we give it to them.
Yeah.
Of course. So if they want, down to the organ, Do you want the heart, the liver, all the kidneys, all those kinds of things? And in a lot of cases, they don't.
They just don't.
Or you're like, do you want the feet and the heads? Some of them do.
Yeah.
But many of them don't.
Yeah. Most of our customers are like, no. Like, why would I want that? Yeah. And we're like, yay. So I take the heads and the feet and make a really nutritious bone broth. This isn't the chicken broth with all the MSG and all the flavorings and everything else you're going to get in the store. And even if they don't have those things, you're not getting the same nutrition as you do in a bone broth that I keep going for 24 hours. And then I can that, or we just keep it in the fridge and we use it over, our week or our 2 weeks. So that's another way to really save a lot of money. Look for things that you purchase and try to figure out how you can do it at home from scratch a lot cheaper. And those are just two examples.
Yeah, that's great. And there's many more.
There really is. And, if you're a big spaghetti sauce purchaser, learn how to make it a little bit simpler so you're buying just cans of tomato. Right. And then maybe the next season you grow more tomatoes so that now you can can your own tomatoes and you can use that to make the spaghetti sauce.
You need to think, though, to scale everything up a little bit.
Right.
Because any time that you sit down to do something, I mean, if you sit down to make one loaf of bread,
right,
you're generally taking the same amount of time as if one loaf as opposed to six loaves.
Yes. And that's what I do. I'll make four loaves, and we do that about every 5 days or so, four loaves of bread. And that's another way to save a lot of money. Pre-made bread at the store is probably, especially for the nutrition that you're getting at home, two or three times as expensive as it is just make your own bread.
Right. That's because they are value adding.
Right.
You're not buying wheat and grains, you're buying bread that's made.
Yep.
And you're paying for it.
Yep.
Another recommendation, again, this really depends on where you're at, but for us, heating is really important here in Northern Idaho. Mm. We use wood heat primarily. We have a backup propane heat as far as like a furnace. So we have that. But our primary heat is wood because we have basically an unlimited renewable resource here of wood. So as long as we season our wood properly and everything else, we have really nice wood heat. And that's also an opportunity. So not only does that save us money, yes, we have to do a lot of labor for that, but that's okay. Again, we don't do everything just to save money. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to doing all that yourself as well. But even selling wood. Yeah, and again, the more you value add, the better. So if you're selling cords of wood, you're getting X amount of dollars for your cords of wood, depending on what type of wood you're selling. But if you go to the little local convenience store and make the little bundle of, 6 to 8 pieces of wood and put a nice little string around it and put a little piece of paper on it talking about how this was, local, blah, 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 wood, and each one of those bundles sells for $5.
Ridiculous.
Which they do.
They do.
And maybe you get $3 for that little thing, and then the convenience store gets $2 or whatever. So.
And yes, people do buy those regularly.
Absolutely, they do.
They're always out at Lowe's and Home Depot and all the stores. It's like it's always empty, and they're needing more.
And
it's
here's amazing. One is buy off peak season. And I'm not just talking about wood. I'm talking about anything. So it's just like we talk about animals. If you really want to look to buy animals, you do it in the winter time when people are desperate to get rid of them. Okay. That's just, it was bad planning on their part. And so that's a great time to buy. Same thing with firewood. In the middle of winter is not the time to go find cords of wood because they're at their highest price. It's the same thing with propane. In the middle of the summer when demand is lowest, is generally speaking. Of course, there's all kinds of other geopolitical factors involved in this. But, find the off-peak season, and then that's when you make your purchases. So if you are organized, then you can do that. If you're not, then you usually end up like everybody else buying it during the peak seasons.
Yeah, well, and if you're not organized, your whole homestead is probably losing money anyway. So that's why we're going to be doing
goal setting
and talking about managing your projects, and because you have to be organized if you want to be a successful homesteader.
That's right. Now, the final kind of thing that we're going to talk about today, and there are several aspects to this, and it's really important, is if you want to change your financial situation with homesteading, you need to live simpler.
Yep.
And we've hit on a lot of these things, but some concepts that we can use to kind of guide this discussion would be to eat simpler.
Yeah, and you know, I think there's a lot of moms out there, and it's I bug moms because I think dads go, well, yeah, whatever, that's fine. Moms seem to, you know, want to coddle their kids a little bit more, and so I think moms struggle a little bit when they think, well, gosh, my child isn't getting the same thing that all of those other kids are getting. You know, they're getting the candy and the treats and pastries, and you know, they get boxed cereal, you know, maybe Lucky Charms or whatever every morning. And my child is only...
They're deprived.
Yeah, they're deprived.
They're eating oatmeal every day. Oatmeal. We can't possibly do that.
That's not depriving your child. You know, you're providing nutritious food. And really, if you think of it that way, it does help you, because the kids that are getting the junk aren't getting nutritious food that's feeding their body and building health. They're getting nutritious food, and they're getting it consistently.
Right.
You know, don't feel like, you know, you're not doing a good job as a mom because you're not feeding your kids all that junk. You're doing a great job as a mom because you're taking that extra time to give them something that's going to build their health and build their bodies. So, you know, when you're thinking about eating simpler, one thing you can teach your children is to eat what's in front of them and not be so picky. When you start out, when their children are little, this is what we did with our kids. Whatever we ate, they ate. And so there wasn't an option. They can say, well, I don't eat green beans, or I don't eat this, or I don't eat that.
They only eat corn dogs and fish sticks.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
It happened because that's what moms gave them. And that's the thing. We, you know, teach them to have broad palates and to be adventurous in their food. So, like, when we moved out here, and our children had never had venison. And everyone was willing to try it, and everybody was excited, and everyone loved it. Same thing with rabbit. Mm-hmm. I had never cooked rabbit, and the first rabbit I cooked was actually a wild rabbit, which turned out a little tough. But the domestic rabbits are really tender and tasty. So nobody ever went, ew, you know, even liver. I mean, we did the liver from the deer, and the liver and the hearts from the rabbits, and everybody really enjoyed the taste. And so if you're talking about living simpler and eating simpler, you have to teach your children to be content with what's put in front of them.
Right. And if that's you, and if that's kind of what you've been doing, it's okay. You just need to make a slow transition.
Yeah.
You just need to start transitioning. You don't have to do it all right away, you know, cold turkey, but start making the change.
Yeah. And like you were saying the other night, it builds character.
Yes, it does.
In people.
You eat oatmeal 6 days a week. And don't complain about it and be happy about it. That builds character.
It does. And you know, it also makes the times that you do have the treats more special.
That's right. Once a week, we have a big farm breakfast. Eggs and bacon.
Pancakes.
And everyone's just like, wow, this is so great.
Yeah.
You know, they're not expecting that every day.
Right. And times that we have cookies or treats, which is so rare. It is so appreciated. The kids love it. And, it, you know, although they all complain, go, woo, that was really sweet, because they're not used to eating sugar.
Yeah.
Which is
okay,
good.
Okay, so eating simple. And that goes with, I mean, most of the time we have soups, casseroles, and stews.
Yes. I mean, you have a large family. And when you have less money, you need to learn to cook simpler. You know, and you're stretching everything you possibly can. If you roast a chicken, which we don't, but if you do roast a chicken, use it again. I use it for a stew, and then I'll use it for a soup. I use that chicken twice.
Right. Yeah. Very good. With that, that saves money, mm-hmm. obviously. It really does. When you start putting all these things together that we're talking about, you can save some serious money.
Yeah.
How about activities?
Oh, yeah.
This is another area. I think it goes hand in hand with, I'm going to deprive my child if they don't get sweethearts.
Right.
Lucky Charms. I'm going to deprive my child if I don't go to 5 different activities a week.
Right. Them. They have to go to their, you know.
They're 3 years old and they have ballet, Mommy and Me, and piano, and
yeah,
dance. And
yeah. And, you know, the kids, I think we have I don't know when this happened, but we've busied our children's lives so much with activities that they never learn to just sit, think, have a conversation, you know, read a book that isn't something other than fantasy, because they think that they should be, you know, out with their friends. They have to be socializing all the time. And, you know, you think back to, let's say, 100 years ago, that was unheard of. People just didn't, I think it's less than 100 years ago. When I grew up, we didn't do a ton of activities. We maybe had one all year. You know, maybe you played baseball and that was your one activity that you did the entire year. Maybe. I mean, I took piano lessons. That was my activity.
Yeah.
I wasn't involved in five other things, and my parents weren't running around, driving us to all these different activities. And first of all, the gas can get expensive. Your time that you're having to take away from the homestead is making it harder for you to make things from scratch or to be doing the enterprises on your homestead that you should be doing, you know, providing for your family in practical ways. Also, when your kids are involved in all those entertainment activities, they're not involved in active work on your homestead. And that's what's really going to build their work ethic, their character.
And your homestead.
And your homestead. Right. And it builds family. Instead of separating your kids into all these different things, you're building family. You're building something that's meaningful and long-lasting.
We've also come to a point in our culture where we think it's wrong to make your kids work.
Yeah.
I mean, beyond, you know, take the garbage out.
Yeah, but you know, in our family, our kids, they actually will, they're very protective of their own chores.
That's right.
And if anyone else tries to step in.
I got the hoop house is my responsibility.
Yeah.
That's my stuff.
Who went in there? You know, who's touching this? And if we try and switch chores around, it's like, well, wait, that's mine. That's what I do. They think of it as a privilege.
Right. And so if you can give your kids ownership of those areas, not only ownership of your homestead, but ownership over each little area, and give them that incentive, then they're going to want to do it.
Yeah, and they do. They really love work. And like we were talking about yesterday, people need meaning. They need purpose in their life. Right. And if you don't provide that in meaningful ways, they'll find it in other ways. So they'll get into video games. They'll get into card collecting or sports, friends, drugs, whatever. They're going to find it, and they're going to fill their life with some sort of purpose.
Yeah.
And it's our job as parents to help them fill it with something meaningful.
Absolutely. Now, we've talked about this before, but preparing to go back to preparing to homestead is you really need to, if you're not doing this already, we never really did, is doing a lot of, you know, movies and video games and iPads and TV, you know, that your kids are watching. If they're doing that, you need to start backing them off of that.
Yeah.
That will be a huge hindrance, because it's hard to move from a kid who is entertainment minded and who is entertained all the time to, oh, hey, you need to start doing a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, and it's already a hard enough move if you're moving from a neighborhood where he's got all his buddies and all of that to suddenly living out in the country. And then on top of that, you're taking away all of the things he's ever done.
Right.
His television and his entertainment. And it seems like you've now, you know, stuck him in prison and he's on the chain gang.
Yeah. You know, and we're just out of, well, I'd say a little while ago, we were just out of the establishment phase. And we're really in our kind of our building phase. So, you know, for the first year out here, really, I guess you call it establishment.
Yeah.
And we worked really hard, and our kids worked really hard to establish this homestead. Now we're still building.
Yeah.
But not at the
rate that we did the first year. The first year was a lot of work and a lot of investment as far as our time and resources went. And the kids, I mean, they worked and they just didn't have, they never complained. They really did. Some of those summer days, we worked long hours because there was light for a long time.
They definitely did a good job. So living simpler is really important. And work is a part of simple living. That's just the truth. And it's a good thing.
Yep.
And it's a blessing upon your children to give them lots of work.
Yes,
it really is. I'm not talking about slave labor. I'm talking about good, hard work. So they develop a good, hard work ethic.
And it toughens them up. They get tougher and, you know, and strong and in character and in their physical bodies.
Yep. Now, if you're a homeschooler out there, then homeschooling simpler.
Yeah.
Would be another way.
Look for free resources. There's so many things online now that are available for homeschoolers that cost nothing. The library is another great place. When my kids were young, I did a lot of unit studies and lap books and things like that. That was all free. That I didn't pay anything for any of that. I went to the library, utilized those books. We read a lot of things online. We watched educational movies on YouTube, which are still available. There's ways that you can do that very cheaply. I talk to some moms sometimes, and they'll say, "Well, I can't homeschool. We just don't have the resources or the finances." And I think you don't need them anymore. When I first started homeschooling back in 97, everything was by mail. I had to have a catalog. I had to mail in my order.
Right.
Now, it's not like that. You don't have to purchase anything.
No, and I would say, stop chasing all the curriculum.
Curriculum, yes.
You don't need super fancy curriculum. You don't need brand new curriculum. I mean, there's so many boards out there.
There are, and everybody's swapping, giving away. And if you are looking for curriculum, Rod and Staff is very affordable, and it's reusable for every single one of your children, which is what I've done for English is just, for the grammar, reusing that. And I've gotten really good use out of all of my Rod and Staff English books.
Right. Now, and a lot of homeschoolers are guilty of this. They try and overcompensate for homeschooling based on the pressure from the culture of the socialization, mantra that they put their kids in just as many activities, or if not more.
Yeah.
To try and make up for the fact that they're schooling at home. You don't need to do that.
Right.
And nothing against the co-op, but
it's not necessary.
It's not necessary.
It's
nice to have if you want to do that.
Yeah. And if you are a new homeschooler and you're looking, for
support
and help, you can either get those online or, going to a local support group. And most of those, the mom support groups and the homeschooling groups, most of those are free. If you're talking about a co-op, now you're talking about more time commitment and, more money out. I've never been a big co-op person. I have, over the years, joined a few homeschool groups where we would do once a month, field trips. But I've never done that consistently, because I found it to be a little restrictive for my schedule, which I liked to keep more open and be able to do things whenever I wanted to with my kids. So
yeah, and then of course utilizing the library.
Yeah, absolutely. The library is a great resource, and your librarian is always really helpful. If you go in and say, "Hey, we're going to be studying this particular subject next month. Can you help me find some resources?" She'll even go on looking at other libraries and things that you can pull in. I've always had really good success with librarians.
Right. So instead of having, buying a bunch of books and stuff, use the library. If you're short on money or you're trying to do this, there's another area to kind of cut out the extras.
Yep. You don't need all that extra expense, and you can always I always rechecked our books, so we ended up having them for at least 6 to 9 weeks. So
right. Yeah, so they allow you to do that.
Yep.
So if they need more time, you got it.
It's great.
So cutting out other extras, whatever it may be, things that usually we look and go, okay, well, how are we just like the culture?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have to – I want to go see the Star Wars right now. It just came out. I want to go see – I got to go see it. I got to, put my memes on Facebook, and I've got to go and go with my 50 closest friends.
We're not making fun
friends.
Of people.
No, I'm not. I mean, we want to see the movie, but we're going to be perfectly honest with you. We're going to wait till it comes out at the discount theater.
Yeah, because we have a theater that's $3. And the movies are a little old, but honestly, because we don't watch TV, we have no clue. Except for I do know Star Wars is out now because it's all over Facebook.
Right.
But we really don't know what's out in the theaters. So when we drive by the discount theater, whenever we go into town, we look and go, "Oh, let's look that up and see, or maybe we want to have a day out with the kids and $3 movies
now,
when you got a lot of kids, it's cheap."
It's doable.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not doable when you go to a regular theater.
Especially in 3D.
Right. It's ridiculous how much that stuff costs now. Or it's not doable to take our entire family out for dinner.
No.
At a nice place. We can't do it.
No. I mean,
so you got to look for ways, you know, to cut out these extras.
And when we do movies, because we have, I think we've, well, we don't do them frequently. It's very infrequently. And again, it's a special treat.
Right.
This is something
that... I'm pretty excited about going to a movie theater.
Yeah.
I think we've done that like once in the
once
last year.
In the last
with,
year.
With all the kids.
Yeah.
Here at home, we have our, well, usually, we have our
weekly.
You know, one weekly movie, family movie.
Yeah, we watch one
that's
movie
it.
A week, and you know, and we make that special too. I pop popcorn, and that's our pizza night. We do homemade pizza with the crust, and everything is homemade. And that it's kind of a family night event, and that's fun and special for the kids because they don't watch movies other than that.
Yeah. Okay, so that's we've talked about a lot of ways that a person that is, you know, doesn't have a lot of money can homestead.
Yep.
You know, if they're on land right now or if they're thinking about it and they're like, I don't know how it ever, I can only see me being able to make, you know, $30,000, $35,000 at my off-property job. I don't know how I could ever do it. Well, we've given you a lot to think about, and I think many different ways that if anyone were to apply some of this stuff, you could at least dramatically improve your situation.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to leave you with one thing, and this is more about buying land than anything else, but it's a truth that most people don't want to accept. Most of us, me included, you know, I want a lot of land. Mm-hmm. I want 100 acres. I want 40 acres. But the reality is that most of us who have land do not fully utilize our land. That's just the truth. Most people who quote unquote homestead utilize very little of their land when it comes down to it. You know, unless you have an established farm or whatever, or you're haying. I'm talking about your average homesteader that's kind of going back to the land and wants to relearn skills and grow some food. Mm-hmm. And most people do not utilize a lot of the land. So when you sit there and think about, I want my 40-acre homestead, think about that for a minute. Most people who have 40-acre homesteads do not even come close to utilizing all that land.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably going to be utilizing around 3 acres.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, 3 to 5 maybe if you're running some bigger animals. And, you know, if you get into some of these enterprises and you realize, you know what, there's a good opportunity here for a raw milk dairy, maybe you're going to then utilize 20 or 30 acres.
Right.
Okay. But think that through when you think about buying land. Most people do not fully utilize their own land.
Right. And it also, you know, having 40 acres and a lot of it being forest, that's a lot of upkeep. And we've got we have to walk the land, we have to cut down the dead and dying trees, we have to be watching for disease and pests.
Yeah.
You know,
maintaining our forest, you know, trying to do regeneration, trying to favor the species that do well around here and maybe disfavor some of the ones that are more prone to pests and disease.
Yeah, I mean, it's serious business. This isn't like, oh, we'll just leave it alone and we don't have to worry about it. You do have to worry about it. The bigger your property gets, the more maintenance you're going to have and the more work it's going to be involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think why don't we stop there? I think this is going to end up being a 2-part podcast. We went for a long time.
Oh, yeah, it's an hour and a half.
Yeah, so we will stop there. And hopefully this gave you some things to ponder and think about. If you have questions, send them to us. We are actually looking to start a listener podcast at least once a month.
Yeah.
So send us your questions. You can just send it to us on Facebook at The Prepared Homestead, or go to our website, thepreparedhomestead.org, and send us contact there with your questions. And if you don't mind, you put your name on there, and we'll even, you know, put your name as far as the question. And if you give us some specifics, then we could do a better job of answering your question.
Yeah, and just like this one, if it's a question that actually warrants an entire podcast or two, we'll research and get that information in nice long podcasts. Some of the questions that we get can be answered very quickly, and so we can do that on a listener question podcast. But this one sparked. We understood when we saw this question that it really was something that other people could greatly benefit from. Yes. And we had a lot of ideas that we wanted to put in there, and we realized it was not going to be a short little answer.
No, because we've thought long and hard about this. In fact, we're passionate about this. You know, part of helping people to be self-sufficient and, you know, equipping them is to help them to become entrepreneurial in thinking.
Yep.
And so that's really important. Now, if you have a very specific case, we are available for consulting. We do consulting work. Now, we put a lot of time into an individual. So if that is you in some way, you can also contact us about that. We do land analysis and design and entrepreneurial and type consulting to help with your individual situation. But obviously, that would have to be on a specific basis. And I think we'll end it right there. Our verse for today comes from Luke chapter 2, verses 6 and 7. And while they were there, the time came for her to give birth. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn.
Our shout out for today actually goes to some family, Oma and Grandpa John in Bellevue. We love you. Merry Christmas.